Chapter 9. Dead Jews of the Desert. On a narrow street in Damascus, Syria, the oldest city in the world, I pull open a heavy iron door in a cinder block wall and enter an ancient synagogue. Behind the door, just past a tiled courtyard shaded by a large tree, I step inside and am stunned by what I see. I'm standing in a jewel box. The small room is illuminated by dozens of elaborate beaded chandeliers. Its walls are covered with thick red velvet drapes, its stone floor with richly patterned carpets. In front of me is a large flat stone topped with a golden menorah. Here, an inscription informs me the Hebrew prophet Elijah anointed his successor, Elisha, as described in the biblical Book of Kings. Legend dates this synagogue to biblical times, though historical sources confirm its age at a mere 500 years. For a place that drew Jewish pilgrims for centuries, it is remarkably well-preserved and startlingly intimate. There are no pews here. Instead, there are low-cushioned couches facing one another, as though this were a sacred living room. A raised marble platform at the room's center has a draped table for public Torah readings. On the room's far end is an ornate wooden cabinet filled with ancient Torah scrolls, their parchments concealed inside magnificent silver cases. On the walls are framed Hebrew inscriptions, featuring the same prayers my son is currently mastering for his bar mitzvah in New Jersey. I read the familiar ancient words and feel my breath leave me with the jerking motion of a dream, tripping on a missing step as I fall through a hole in time. I should mention here that I've never been to Damascus. Also, this synagogue no longer exists. I'm on the website of a virtual museum called Diarna, a Judeo-Arabic word meaning our homes. The flagship project of the nonprofit group Digital Heritage Mapping, Diarna is a vast online resource that combines traditional and high-tech photography, satellite imaging, digital mapping, 3D modeling, archival materials, and oral histories to allow anyone to virtually visit Jewish historical sites throughout the Middle East and North Africa, though the project has now expanded to include sites around the globe. As I write this, with the coronavirus pandemic trapping millions of people in quarantine, virtual tours have become de rigueur for hundreds of international tourist attractions. Diarna might seem like just one more online field trip, a fun way to hop on a screen and explore. But Diarna is something entirely different from a digital playground. It is an outrageously difficult and utterly thankless effort in preserving places that apathy and malevolence have almost erased from the world. The places Diarna documents aren't merely threatened by political instability, economic hardship, authoritarianism, and intolerance. In many cases, Diarna's virtual records are all that stands between these centuries-old treasures and total oblivion. That synagogue I visited, the Eliyahu Hanavi Jobar Synagogue in Damascus, was documented by one of Diarna's photographers in 2010. In 2016, Syria's civil war transformed the priceless 500-year-old site to rubble, photos of which you can also find on Diarna. The implications of this project are enormous, not only for threatened Middle Eastern minorities, but for everyone. It has the power to change the very nature of how we understand the past. Diarna was created in 2008 by Jason Guberman Pfeffer, who was then a recent college graduate active in Middle Eastern human rights circles, and Fran Molino, a Wellesley professor, now emerita, studying North African Jewish history. That year, a mutual acquaintance of theirs traveled to Morocco to explore her family's Moroccan Jewish roots, and she found that many of the places she visited, synagogues, schools, and cemeteries, were startlingly decayed. And the elderly people who remembered the places best were dying off. At that point, the senior scholar Molino and the young activist Guberman Pfeffer put their heads together and realized that by combining their archival skills, their contacts in the region, and newly available technologies, they could create, in the virtual world, a way to preserve these places forever. It morphed almost immediately into this huge project, remembers Molino, who is now Diarna's head of digital heritage mapping. Molino began by recruiting among her own students, but was soon startled by how many young people, including American photographers and budding scholars, and also locals in the region, signed on. In very short order, with a very small budget, we had a number of people working for us so we could set up a website and accumulate a lot of information and photos. Over a decade later, with Guberman Pfeffer as its director, Diarna has run more than 60 field expeditions, sending photographers and researchers to collect information and visual evidence of the remains of Jewish communities in dozens of countries. and the organization has now documented nearly 3,000 sites throughout the Middle East and North Africa, as well as elsewhere in the world. On Diarna's online interactive map, anyone can zoom in and explore them all. Some of these locations include little more than a town's name and basic information about its Jewish history, with research still in progress. But many include beautiful photography showing physical sites from many angles, bibliographies of historical resources, and oral histories from former Jewish residents describing lives lived in these places. Other sites are being elaborately documented in ways unimaginable even just a few years ago. Today, Diarna's photographers and researchers are using tools like a portable no-parallax camera that creates a fully immersive 360-degree view of a building's interior, drone photography for bird's-eye views of ancient ruins, and design software that can turn traditional photography into vivid 3D models. Social media has also made it newly possible, even easy, to collect amateur photos and videos of places otherwise inaccessible, and to locate people who once lived in these Jewish communities. Diarna's interactive map often includes links to amateur videos and photos when no others exist, giving people a window on sites that are otherwise invisible. And as former Jewish residents of these places age beyond memory's reach, Diarna's researchers are conducting as many in-person interviews with such people as they can, creating a large backlog in editing and translating these oral histories to make them accessible to the public. "We're in a race against time to put these places on the map," Guberman Pfeffer says, "and to preserve these stories before they're forever lost." I've been thinking about time and loss since I was 6 years old, when it first dawned on me that people who die do not return, and that this was also true for each day I'd ever lived. My obsession with this unforgiving fact turned me into a writer, chasing the possibility of capturing those disappearing days. These efforts inevitably fail, though I stupidly keep trying. When I first learned about Diarna, I was a bit alarmed to discover an entire team of people who not only shared my obsession, but who were entirely undeterred by the relentlessness of time and mortality, as if a crowd of chipper, sane people had barged into my private psych ward. The bright, almost surreal hope that drives Diarna is the idea that, with the latest technology, those lost times and places really can be rescued, at least virtually, from oblivion. Jews have lived throughout the Middle East and North Africa for thousands of years, often in communities that long predated the Islamic conquest. But during the mid-20th century's tumultuous power shifts in the region between colonial and post-colonial control, political instability and anti-Semitic violence intensified to create a vast exodus, driving nearly a million Jews to emigrate to Israel and elsewhere, leaving entire countries all but devoid of Jews, and leaving behind synagogues, schools, and cemeteries that served these communities for generations. The circumstances of this mass migration varied. In some places, like Morocco, the Jewish community's flight was largely voluntary, driven partly by sporadic anti-Semitic violence, but mostly by poverty and fear of regime change. At the other extreme are countries like Iraq, where Jews were stripped of their citizenship and had their assets seized, and where, in the capital city of Baghdad, a 1941 pogrom left nearly 200 Jews murdered and hundreds of Jewish-owned homes and businesses looted or destroyed. Today, people and governments in the region have varying attitudes toward the Jewish communities that once called them home. Morocco publicly honors its Jewish history. There, the government has supported Jewish site maintenance, and Diarna cooperates with the local nonprofit called Mamouna, named for a Moroccan Jewish post-Passover celebration, a group devoted to documenting Jewish life. In other places, there is public denigration or even denial of a Jewish past. In Saudi Arabia, for instance, decades of pan-Arabist and Islamist propaganda have left the public ignorant that Jews even lived in the kingdom at all after the Islamic conquest, despite recent official efforts to recognize the kingdom's remarkable Jewish historical sites, including the ruins of entire Jewish cities. Diarna is officially apolitical, refusing to draw conclusions about any of this, which for a novelist like me is maddening. I want the past to be a story, to mean something, especially a past as dramatically severed from the present as this one is. So do lots of other people, it turns out, from Zionists to Islamic fundamentalists. Guberman Pfeffer politely declines to engage. "It's not our job to give a reason why this particular village doesn't have Jews anymore," he tells me. "We just present the sites." Malino, as a historian, is even more rigorous in defending Diarna's neutral approach. In my mind, the goal is to make available to all of us, whether they're in ruins or not, the richness of those sites, and to preserve the wherewithal of accessing that information for the next generation. We are not taking a political position, not trying to make a statement. Absolutely not. Every Diurna researcher I talked to stood firm on this point. But the choice to present these Jewish sites is itself a statement, one that underscores an undeniable reality. The Middle East is becoming more homogeneous. I hear this from Diurna's chief research coordinator, Eddie Ashkenazi, himself a descendant of Syrian Jews, who emphasizes the project's value for people in the region today. We're pointing out that the store next to your grandfather's in the market was once owned by the Cohen family, he says. Whether they got along or it was fraught with tension is going to vary depending on the time and place, but it testifies to a society that had other voices in it, that had minorities in it, that was heterogeneous. Today, you have whole societies that are only Libyan Muslims or only Shiite Arabs, but they used to be incredibly diverse. All Diurna is trying to do is say that Jews once lived here. Diurna is currently focused on documenting Jewish communities in rural areas of North Africa and the Middle East, where establishing this simple historical reality is a radical act. We are rewriting the history books, Ashkenazi claims, and then corrects himself. Or not rewriting, we're just writing the history, period, because no one else has yet. Ashkenazi walks me through an elaborate presentation that spells out exactly how Diurna does its current work. He tells me about the Libyan town of Msalata, where a former Jewish resident, interviewed by one of Diurna's researchers, mentioned that the synagogue was once located near the police station. On screen, Ashkenazi shows me how he used the mapping tool Wikimapia to find the town's police station and calculate a walking distance radius around it. Next came diligence plus luck. While scouring Libyan social media, he came across an archival photo that a current Msalata resident happened to post on Facebook, which clearly showed the synagogue across the street from a mosque. Ashkenazi then identified the still-standing mosque from satellite images, thereby confirming the synagogue's former location. What you don't see here are the hours of interviews before we got to the guy who mentioned the police station, Ashkenazi says. It's the work of ants. It's very tedious, but it works. As I listen to the awe in Ashkenazi's voice, I find myself wondering why anyone would do this work of ants. Is there really value to documenting this level of detail? At what point does one simply accept that what's past is past? My own great-grandparents, Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe at the turn of the last century, wanted at all costs to forget the old country. This was true for many Middle Eastern Jewish refugees as well, especially those with memories of societies that had turned on them. Ashkenazi admits that many of Diurna's interviewees, mostly elderly Israelis, have to be convinced to sit down with his researchers, baffled as to why anyone would care. The idea that some earnest archivist would call them up and ask them to identify the street corner where their synagogue once stood would have seemed absurd to my ancestors, too. But my cynicism about this work of ants quickly slides into horrifying hopelessness, which is exactly why Diurna's work is so emotionally wrenching to observe. The frightening reality beneath Diurna's efforts is the same one that haunted me as a child. The disappearance of these communities is just an acute and sometimes violent version of what eventually happens to every community everywhere. All of us will die. All of our memories will be lost. Today, it's a synagogue in Tunisia that's crumbling. Eventually, the sun will explode. Why even try? These questions haunt me as I sift through Diurna's site, along with some unedited video interviews that Ashkenazi shares with me, to give me a sense of the enormous scope of oral history material Diurna is working to collect, translate, and post. A man describing Yom Kippur in rural Yemen, a woman detailing the Tomb of Ezra in Iraq, someone else recalling the Hebrew textbooks he studied in a Cairo school. The speakers in these videos are deeply foreign to me, elderly people with Arabic accents describing daily lives I can barely imagine. Yet they often mention things I recognize, a holiday, a biblical figure, a prayer, a song. It occurs to me that Jewish tradition, like every tradition, is designed to protect against oblivion, capturing ancient experiences in ritual and story and passing them between generations, and that Diurna is simply a higher-tech version of what everyone's ancestors once did, passing along memories around a fire, technology expanding that warm, bright circle around the fire to the world at large. I zoom in, listen, as if leaning toward the warmth, the light. And then, as I click idly from one Diurna file to another, an invisible curtain rises. In an oral history video not yet translated or posted online, an elderly Israeli man speaks in Arabic-accented Hebrew about his hometown of Yefrin in Libya. Up the hill from his family's branch-ceilinged stone house, he says, was the tiny town's 800-year-old synagogue and adjoining ritual bath. As he sits with a Diurna researcher at his kitchen table in Israel, he scribbles maps and floor plans describing the synagogue with its interior arches, its columns, its holy ark for Torah scrolls. Listening to this man's rambling voice is like hearing someone recount the elaborate details of a dream, which is why it is utterly unnerving to click on the town of Yefrin on Diurna's interactive map and find a recent YouTube clip by a British traveler who enters the actual physical ruins of that very synagogue. In the video, the building is a crumbling wreck, but its design is exactly as the Israeli man remembered it. I follow the on-screen tourist in astonishment as he wanders aimlessly through the once sacred space. I recognize, as if from my own memories, the arches, the columns, the alcove for the Torah scrolls, the waterline still visible in the remains of the ritual bath. The work of ants actually magically works. The effect is humbling, shocking, like seeing a beloved dead relative in a dream. The past is alive, trembling within the present. The problem is that Diurna's hardworking ants are often digging on a live volcano. This is a region where ISIS and other groups are hell-bent on wiping out minorities, where political upheaval has generated the greatest human migration stream since the end of World War II, and where the deliberate destruction of priceless cultural artifacts sometimes happens because it's Wednesday. Mapping sites in this environment can require enormous courage. Not only because of instability and war, but because the hatred that prompted the Jews' flight has surreally outlived their departure. Libya is one of many places where Jews were violently rejected by their society. Tripoli was more than 25% Jewish before World War II. But in 1945, more than 100 Jews in the city were murdered and hundreds more wounded in massive pogroms, prompting the community's flight. Later, the dictator Muammar Gaddafi expelled all remaining Jews and confiscated their assets. In 2011, after Gaddafi's ouster, a single Libyan Jew who returned and attempted to remove trash from the wreckage of the city's Darbishi synagogue was hounded out of the country by angry mobs waving signs reading "No Jews in Libya." Apparently one was too many. Earlier that year, a journalist in Tripoli offered to provide Diurna with photos of the once grand Darbishi, a feat requiring Marvel superhero tactics. She slipped her minders and broke into the synagogue, which was strewn with garbage, and took pictures of it all, Guberman Pfeffer told me of the reporter. Gaddafi's men captured her and confiscated her camera, but the camera was the decoy, and she had pictures on her cell phone. From her photos, Diurna built a 3D model of the synagogue. The reporter still refuses to be named for fear of repercussions. Other Diurna researchers have resorted to similar subterfuges or narrow escapes. One Kurdish journalist who helped document Iraqi Jewish sites had to flee a poison gas attack. Even those well beyond war zones often feel on edge. As I spoke with Diurna's devoted researchers, a mix of professionals, student interns, and volunteers, I was alarmed by how many of them warily asked me to let them review any quotes, knowing how haters might pounce on a poorly worded thought. One photographer who cheerfully told me how he'd gotten access to various Diurna sites by smiling my way in, suddenly lost his spunk at the end of our conversation as he insisted that I not use his name. If people knew he was Jewish, he confided, he might lose the entree he needed for his work. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get these images out to the public, says Christy Sherman, a photographer who has done multiple expeditions for Diurna and who took the pictures of the destroyed synagogue in Damascus. Sherman was documenting Tunisian sites for Diurna in 2010 when she decided on her own to go to Syria, despite rumblings of danger. I was terrified, she remembers. I left all of my portrait equipment with a friend in Tunis and just took my Nikon and went to Damascus and prayed to God that I would be okay. Following a lead from a Syrian woman in Brooklyn, she went to the country's last remaining Jewish-owned business, an antique shop in Damascus. The owner took her with other family members to the synagogue, which was no longer used for worship, and where his elderly father, remembering praying there years earlier, sat in his family's old seats and broke down in tears. At another synagogue, Sherman was followed by government agents. They asked why I was there, and I just told them I was a Buddhist doing a project on different religions. I didn't tell them I was Jewish. You have to think on your feet. Sherman's photographs for Diarna are incandescent interiors glowing with color and light. Even her pictures from rural Tunisia of abandoned synagogues in states of utter ruin radiate with a kind of warmth, a human witness holding the viewer's hand. It's hard to describe this feeling, which I have over and over again, she says of her work for Diarna. You are seeing centuries of Jewish history that have unfolded. And now everything, well, the world has just changed so dramatically, and a lot of things are coming to an end. Her words remind me of a Talmudic passage brought to life by the Hebrew poet Chaim Nachman Bialik in an epic work called Dead of the Desert. The passage and poem describe desert wanderers who discover the mythically preserved bodies of the generation of Israelites, ageless generation, a people awesome in power, ancient of days, who died in the desert before reaching the promised land, silent witnesses to a forgotten past. I was only in Syria for 5 days, and I was so excited to return with my portrait equipment, Sherman told me. But then the Arab Spring began, and I couldn't go back. You can't go back. No one ever can. But it's still worth trying. Because of Diarna, I see my own American landscape differently. I pass by the tiny 18th century cemetery near my home with its Revolutionary War graves, and I think of the histories that might lie unseen alongside the ones we enshrine, wondering whether there might be a Native American burial ground under the local Walgreens, whether I am treading on someone else's ancient sacred space. I know that it must be. We are always walking on the dead. Yet something more than time's ravages keeps me returning to Diarna. As I explored the photographs and oral histories Diarna has collected, I found myself reeling from yet another anti-Semitic shooting attack in my own country, this one at a kosher market 20 minutes from my home. Its proximity prompting me to hide this information from my children, avoiding mentioning our murdered neighbors. Within days of those murders, my social media feed was already full of pictures from a different attack at a Los Angeles synagogue where someone, whether hatefully motivated or simply unstable, trashed the sanctuary, dumping Torah scrolls and prayer books on the floor. The pictures reminded me of Sherman's jarring Diarna photos of a ruined synagogue in Tunisia, its floors strewn with holy texts abandoned in piles of dust. Our public spaces today, online and off, are often full of open derision and disrespect for others, of self-serving falsehoods about both past and present, of neighbors turning on neighbors. It's tough these days not to sense an encroaching darkness. Peering through the windows of Diarna's many ruins, I'm looking for more light. It's hard to recognize other viewpoints if you're in a bubble where everyone thinks like you, Diarna's research coordinator Ashkenazi tells me. He's talking about homogenized societies in the Middle East, but he could be talking about anywhere, about any of us. By raising this Jewish history, we're puncturing these bubbles and saying that in your bubble at one time not long ago, there were once others with you, he says. It's not so crazy to welcome others. It's not so crazy. I look through the images of our homes, all of our homes. The windows on my screen wide open.